Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back. I am sorry that I missed the last few days, but most of you who are listening all the time, I was in a family, event. My husband had to have an aortic aneurysm stented, and he went in Monday and was operated on, and I brought him home yesterday. And he's doing very well, and I want to thank everybody for all of the prayers and positive energy that I know were sent our way. And he's doing pretty good. He's almost 70 and very, very strong. I refer to him frequently as a bull moose. He sometimes shocks me. He's so strong still at the age he is. And I think that's probably what got him through the past 2 years. First, the congestive heart failure, and then finding this aneurysm. Mind you, he's still annoyed with himself because he feels like his body betrayed him. And if you're one of those people who've never really had any major trauma, accidents every now and then, and work-related accidents, he certainly had his share of. But he's never really been sick. And to all of a sudden realize that parts of your body are just getting too pooped to participate has been kind of upsetting for him. And when he first had the heart failure, he looked at me and I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Do you feel bad?" And he said, "No, I feel all right." He said, "I'm just mad." I said, "Mad about what?" And he says, "Why would I be getting sick now?" And I said, "Well, geez, probably that question's been asked a trillion times from all different corners of the world, I'm sure." But he's rallying pretty quickly. And just a few tidbits I'd like to share with everyone about the surgery that he had done. There's only 13 hospitals in the United States that do this particular surgery, and we are lucky enough to live near one. And the prognosis after a surgery like this is usually pretty good, but I was told by one of the nurses who's been there for a very long time and worked on the vascular floor for a long time that he rallied quicker than most. So, again, my point is he's like a bull moose. So I want to talk a little bit about the hospital in a little while. But first, I want to bring up this thing that I talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's a case of cyberbullying that took place in Canada. And it's really, really kind of awful. But the outcome, you know, you always have mixed emotions because you never like to see anything happen to anybody in truth. At least I don't. But this story changed some laws, so I think it's worth understanding and knowing about. It took place in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada. The police in Canada said Thursday that they've made two arrests in the cyberbullying case of a 17-year-old who died after a photo of her was allegedly being sexually, a photo of her allegedly being sexually assaulted, and it was put online for everybody to see. Her name was Rayte Parsons, and I did talk about her several weeks ago. Her death resulted after her family took her off life support. She took her own life, and it was all because everybody in school saw this assault, and it went viral, and she was bullied, I guess, terribly. Now, what would possess everybody to bully the victim? I'm never sure of. But it seems the one that looks the most vulnerable almost always is the one that gets picked on. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Scott McRae, said that they arrested the two males Thursday. Investigators said that they were being questioned and no further information would be released at this time. McRae declined to say what they were arrested for or whether charges are expected. Due to the sensitive nature around this investigation, the investigators do want to ensure that no court process is affected. I'm not sure what that means. I guess that means that even though they haven't pressed charges, that the court processes are still being carried on. He noted that the police have a 24-hour window, to either release the two males or lay criminal charges. So for the time being, they have 24 hours before they actually charge them. Police in April said a person provided new information in the Parsons case and was willing to verify who the subjects are. We're just hopeful there's charges laid and others to rest, hoping that they're finally willing to tell their side of the story. That's Leah Parsons speaking. That's Ray Tay's mom. A sense of relief came over me that they're at least going to be questioned. The Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, applauded the arrest and said Ray Tay's death was a terrible tragedy that touched people across Canada. I just want to say how pleased we are that the progress has been made. I hope this will provide some measure of comfort to family members. Of course, it probably won't. We all know that. Ray Tay's death has been compared to similar cases in the United States, including a 15-year-old California girl who killed herself after her family says she was sexually assaulted by friends and a photo surfaced online. Arrests were made in that case of Audrey Pott, who hanged herself in September. Now, we talked about Audrey as well. Ray Tay's death prompted the Nova Scotia government to launch reviews of the RCMP's original investigation and the school board's handling of the matter. The review of the RCMP's investigation is ongoing. An independent review released in June concluded the Halifax Regional School Board could have done a better job. But it was hindered by the fact that Ray Tay was often absent from class. Now, how they can flip it around and make it seem like because she missed class, they couldn't follow up? Well, the report also said the Parsons family faced challenges when they turned to Nova Scotia's mental health system for help. The arrests come a day after a new law, this is what I was talking about, has taken effect in the province that allows people to sue if they or their children are being cyberbullied. Victims can also seek a protection order that could place restrictions on help to identify the cyberbully. Now, as terrible as that story is, and as, I don't want to say the word poorly handled, but as I guess it is poorly and badly handled. Something should have been done a long time ago. And after one child takes their life because somebody has been assaulted and they actually put it on a website or put it on their phones and let it go viral, something should have been done the very first time that occurred, and it wasn't. So I'm not going to blame Canada because we've already done it, and it took us a long time to get to a place where the victim was respected. So on that, though, I am pleased that there was a new law passed in regard to the suing. We've talked a little bit about that in the past, about the fact that if somebody hurts you or changes your life to that degree, maybe that is one of the steps we have to take. Maybe it does have to be about money. Everything else is about money. So maybe that's the only thing that's really going to stop some of these things. It stopped a lot of people who drove without insurance. It stopped a lot of people who drove without their driver's license when we got real hard on them. So maybe it is the answer. I don't know. I'm going to take the fifth on that for a little while until we figure something out. But it does hurt my heart to know that young people have to die before we make some pretty critical decisions in regard to that. I have Shelley on, so I'm going to open up the line so we can talk some more about some of these things. Hi, Shel.
Hey, Rainey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I missed the very beginning of the show. I was just getting home, and I didn't have an antenna again for a few minutes. So I didn't hear the story about the lead story that you were talking about.
Well, first I thanked everybody for giving me a few days off and told them how Spike was and what they did to him and everything. And then it's a story that came out of Halifax in Nova Scotia in Canada. And it was a young woman who was attacked and assaulted, and her attackers took a video, and it went viral. And nobody did anything. Nobody even approached the young men who had who did all of it. Who if it's on video, they have to know who did the assault. But so far, no charges. Charges are pending. They have 24 hours from when I read this article. I'm assuming by tomorrow or the next day I'll get a follow-up, because 24 hours, they should post something very soon about what the answer is. But the important thing was that it changed a law in Canada in regard to being able to sue anybody who cyberbullies you. And by cyberbullying, they're talking about the things that they put on the internet, on Facebook, on their cell phones, on their iPads, on whatever they're using, and when they're so atrocious for some reason that's hard for us all to grasp, that's when they go viral, because that's what everybody's interested in seeing, all that horrific stuff that happens to other human beings. So if, like I said a few minutes ago, if we do that, well, they've already done it, Canada. And here in the United States, if you think somebody has done you wrong, you can sue them for almost anything. But maybe that is the answer, Shelley. Maybe it does have to be about money. Everything else is.
Wow. Well, now they bullied this woman physically and recorded it and then put that up on.
No. They physically, sexually assaulted her and taped it or videoed it.
Wow.
And then they put that on the internet.
Oh, my God. And how have no charges been brought against these guys? That doesn't even make any sense at all.
I know. And, well, because apparently they've been trying to figure out, since the actual, aside from the assault crime that is there, I guess they're trying to figure out how to charge them. Obviously, there's several charges that could be brought against them, but one of the most egregious ones is the fact that they let everybody see what they did. And then from that, this young woman, that's when she got bullied in person in school. She was 17, and people just made fun of her, which, again, is atrocious. And this, I cannot for the life of me understand how everybody is so drawn to living without a conscience. I don't know why people can, and it happens to even people you know and like and think are good people. You know, so there's something about it. Our humanness has a real animalistic side, and we.
Yeah, but you can't even say that, because animals don't take pleasure in the suffering of other animals. It's survival of the fittest. It's they only kill or slaughter another animal to protect their territory or to survive. An animal isn't cruel to another animal for the sake of enjoyment. That's something that's strictly human in nature. That's not animalistic.
Well, when I say animalistic, I'm using the terminology as somebody who is not as intelligent as a human being. When I say animalistic, I don't mean because animals are abusive to each other. However, we could argue this point because I've watched a lot of these gorilla and lion shows where it's not just survival of the fittest, it's king of the hill. And a lot of times...
Right, but what I'm saying is humans are the only ones that do it out of cruelty. Animals do it for territory, you know what I'm saying? And if another animal goes in there, they know what they're getting into because they've encroached on another animal's territory, so they're up for a fight. But animals don't do it just for the pleasure they get out of being cruel to another living organism. Humans are unique in that regard.
It's sad to use the word unique in that sentence. But at any rate, I think that there's a big attention getter in that arena, and it is hard to explain, and it is disappointing, and it makes you, you know, it makes you wonder what everybody's thinking when something like that takes place. And this is not the first case like this that we've talked about. This has happened. Matter of fact, in the article that I just read, we did talk about the other young girl that was here in the United States who hung herself. And I don't know how Rete tried to take her life. It doesn't really say, but she was on life support, and when her parents took her off life support, she succumbed to whatever she had attempted previously. So, but I don't know what it was. It doesn't give that information. But it's one of, I want to say there's been like four cases that have had to do with videos going out and going viral that have subjected young people to such horrible ridicule and bullying and everything, and they've taken their lives. And I'm sure there's more, but I think we've talked about four on the show I look through some of my records. So I guess it wouldn't be called an epidemic by the public. I'm sure it would be called an epidemic by the families of the four we read about, because that's kind of the way we roll. You know, if it affects us, then it becomes bigger than life. If it steers clear from our lives, then we seem to look at it as though it's just a, you know, I don't know, something that has only happened once or twice. But that's sadly really not true. So anyway, that was a pretty bad thing that I wanted to talk about when I read that story today, because like I said, we've talked about some of these before, and we did talk about Rete a few weeks ago. But then I want to tell everybody a funny thing. I'm looking on Google today, and I'm going through all the news of the day and everything, and some of it's so silly, and so much of it, honestly, 70% of the news that we read about is about movie stars. And, you know, it's gotten so out of hand. Those poor people don't have a second to themselves. But this big thing flashed across the screen that said shark on the subway. So I'm like, what? So I Google in that, I click on that, and here underneath the seat of one of the subway trains is a dead baby shark. And this girl says she's on the train, and she's going, God, it smells like fish on this train. And they all find the baby shark. Of course, nobody fessed up and said, you know, that they caught it or that they left it there or anything. But so then the very next video, it comes on right after, I didn't even get a chance to take it off, and they're on the same subway in New York City, And here's this very large rat. And this young man is recording this rat running up and down in the train on the subway. And he's trying to get close to people. The rat's trying to crawl up people's legs, and there's an old guy sleeping in the corner. He scrambles right up his leg and tries to get underneath the neck of his jacket. And the old man wakes up and just looks at him and pushes him away, and the rat scrambles down. He goes back to sleep. It was hysterical. But usually you see pictures like that of any kind of a wild rodent, whether it's a squirrel, a chipmunk, a rat, a mouse. They're all mm-hmm. incredibly afraid of us as a rule. I thought to myself, God, maybe it was Ben or something. I don't know. But he wanted to make friends with somebody. It was very obvious. And the young man that recorded the whole thing, he said, I never saw a rat do that. It was like he was looking for somebody to take care of him or something. And I thought, I bet he was somebody's pet.
Wow.
He wasn't just a street rat. He was somebody that somebody had made a little bit social, and he couldn't understand why he couldn't. I mean, I know people that have mice and gerbils and things like that that sleep under their necks. Look at how the ferrets used to be with you.
I know. Yep, exactly. Yeah, and then there's a very common trait among like ferrets and animals like that.
Yeah, they like to burrow and they like to be in a place where they. And I swear that's what this. And he was a big rat, but that's what he was trying to do. And he wasn't like a black, yucky-looking rat like you usually see. He was like a brown rat, but he was quite large. But it was very funny. So I thought both of those were interesting, the shark and the rat. And I thought, geez, no wonder I don't usually ride the subway when we go to New York. We usually take a taxi. That explains a lot. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about tonight is, a lot of times I've talked about the medical arena, all the trouble that we've had with, hospital stays and who takes care of you and who doesn't, and the Medicare and the controversy between, your coverage and whether you got an okay from your preferred provider to be able to go to the next doctor, and everybody's a specialist. We've talked about all of those things, and a lot of it has been in a line of a lot of negativity. And that's what I found. I like to be honest about what we talk about, and it's not very nice to be immersed in that world. However, Monday morning, my husband and I showed up at Boca Regional Hospital, which is in Boca Raton, Florida. And he had to be there at 6 o'clock. We got there at about 4:45. They took us right in right away, and there were 10 or 12 people that were having surgery early in the morning. We go upstairs, and of course, with the name Brewer, we're first quite frequently if they go in alphabetical order. And so they called him in, and he goes in, and they let me come in and sit with him in the little cubicle inside the surgery room. So the first bad thing that happened, and I thought, oh, geez, it's going to be just like everything else. The anesthesiologist had an emergency at home and was going to be late. He was supposed to have surgery at 7:30, and because she was so late, but the nurses and the doctor's assistants, I don't know what their title is. They call them something different everywhere I go, kept coming and telling us what was going on. Nice. That was nice. I mean, it's like waiting for your food in a restaurant and the waitress forgets you're sitting there and doesn't even look at you because she's embarrassed because your food isn't ready. They didn't do that. They kept coming in and saying, we are so sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Brewer. The anesthesiologist, she had a major emergency with her little boy this morning, and she should be here soon. And if it takes much longer, we'll try to find another anesthesiologist. I mean, they let us know what was going on. Big plus. Still not nice to sit and wait, but a big plus because we weren't in the dark and wondering what the hell's going on, And then it was about 9 o'clock, and they took him in, and before they took him in, the doctor came and talked to us, and he said, "I'm sorry about this. This hardly ever happens. It'll put me 2 hours behind for the rest of the day. So I don't blame you if you're angry." And I said, "We're fine. You know, the nurses told us everything that was going on. That makes a big difference." And he smiled and he said, "You're right." And then he looked at me and he said, "Look, best case scenario, this surgery is going to take me a little bit over 2 hours. He said, "Worst case scenario, 4 hours. If I get past the third hour, I will send my nurse that's in the operating room out and let you know what's going on so you're not worried." How nice is that? I said, "Thank you.
Wow.
I would really, really appreciate that." 2 hours and 10 minutes later, out comes the doctor. I've only seen the man twice. The first day we went to see him, and that morning, he of course, I guess I do have kind of a presence that's hard to forget, but there's a room with like 50 people in it. He looks at me and he goes, "Mrs. Brewer, he's done." So I go running over, and he said he did very, very well. Everything was great. He said it was right where I was afraid it was going to be, but he said the stent that we had done fit perfectly. I think he will be fine. So then I had to wait for him to get into a room and all that stuff out of intensive care and everything, and they keep him monitored for quite a long time. So he gets into the room. I get there, and he's got a nurse. He's got two nurses, a lead RN or a floor RN, and then another nurse that's just taking care of him, and a nursing assistant and a housekeeper that's assigned to him, and it's on the board in front of him with a four-digit number that if he hits the buzzer and nobody comes, you know, the nurse buzzer that sits beside you, you can pick up your phone and dial their extension, and they answer the phone themselves. Now, that was, like, amazing for me.
Yeah, that's new to me.
Yeah, I was so impressed by that. And then a couple little incidents, you know, where he asked somebody for something and they kind of forgot or they didn't get back in time. So, of course, I didn't leave the rest of that day until 10 o'clock that night until I was sure he was going to be asleep for a little while. I didn't leave because he wouldn't have been able to do anything. He couldn't get up out of bed. He was on an IV. And the new nurse comes in at 7 o'clock at night. And the two nurses that were with him all day were awesome. They were wonderful. And at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the doctor came in and he said, "You know, he looks great. See if he can walk yet." And Spike said, "I can walk. I'd love to walk. My back is killing me. I've been in bed since 5 o'clock this morning. I'd love to walk." So we get him up. We sit him in the chair. I get him all ready, make sure his butt's not showing, all that good stuff and everything, you know. And they bring in this big walker, a very sturdy-looking thing, and I stand him up, and I'm standing in front of him with my hands on him, and I look at him, and he's white as a ghost and almost falls out on me. His blood pressure went from like 138 over 70-something down to 82 over 42.
Wow.
We sit him in the chair. We get him. He's all clammy and white as a ghost. Scared the girls more than it scared me, probably because I know him. And knew that it was just because he tried to do too much and he gets overzealous. Got him in the bed, but we spent the rest of that day getting his blood pressure back up. And the doctor calls on the phone and says, "The girls thought they were going to lose you." And he said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Dropping your blood pressure that fast could have sent you into shock, could have done anything to you." So they, and from then on, only one thing that I mentioned to the nurse that took over at 7 o'clock, and I said, "I need to say something to you, and I hope you take it the way it's intended." And she said, "Absolutely." And I said, "When somebody is totally bedridden and you're telling them there's signs everywhere, do not get up by yourself. You know, you're in a step up from intensive care. You can't go to the bathroom by yourself. You can't do that. Every one of you have walked out of here. You've moved the table away from him. He can no longer reach his drink of water. He can no longer reach the urinal. If I wasn't here, he'd have wet the bed three times and, you know, just because everybody leaves things out of his touch. And she
right.
smiled and she said, I apologize for that. And she said, I think they all got upset today because of what happened to him. And I said, well, all the more reason to make sure that everything is, you know, nicer for him, right? And she said, absolutely. Well, from then on, I mean, they were good before. This was just something, because I thought to myself, you know, they're just not thinking. They're so upset about everything else that happened was the feeling I got that, and because I was there. I think that had a lot to do with it, and they saw that I was waiting on him hand and foot, and they probably figured no problem. But because of that, I was afraid to leave him alone.
Exactly.
So once I said
exactly.
that, though, it was a whole different thing. And then Tuesday, I was there all day, but I didn't feel like I had to stay late at night. And so I left, I don't know, about 7:30, 8 o'clock Tuesday night, and he did fine. And, of course, I brought him home yesterday. So today I get the mail, and there's a card, a beautiful card from Boca Regional Hospital. And it's all a very fancy card, all printed out. We so appreciated your choice to stay with us at Boca Regional Hospital. And then handwritten, we really love taking care of you. We hope everything is good. Your friends from the second floor.
Oh, wow.
How nice is that, right?
Wow, that is nice. Wow.
Such a little thing.
Amazing.
Doesn't open up any doors for any further communication other than making him and I both feel like, you know, you're a little bit special. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying that is beautiful. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I just, and like I said, and the rest, and then, you know, have you ever been in the hospital and they tell you you can go home today and then you wait another 6 hours?
Yeah.
That's what I was all set to do. They told him he could go home. And I said, now just relax because you know how long this takes. I mean, I've walked out of hospitals before myself when I've been waiting and dressed and pacey and no longer comfortable because I'm not laying down. I'm sitting in a chair and everything and I'm ready to go. And I've walked out. She said, I'll be back in 10 minutes. And she was back in 10 minutes with all the paperwork, with everything signed, with his diet, with everything he needed, including a printout of the doctor's address and phone number just in case I had misplaced it. It was amazing. And I'm going to send a letter and tell them that for the first time in a very long time, I was not just grateful, but I was impressed by everybody's behavior and everybody's professionalism, because it was nice. It was really, really nice. So that leads me into now a story that has really got my Irish up.
Yes.
And to all of you that are listening, I hope you remember last week with a young man by the name of Garrett Holive. And I played the commentary from Bryant Gumbel, and then we discussed it a little bit, and Garrett joined us with his dad and his grandfather. And Garrett was born with Down's syndrome, and I put his website on my Facebook page, and I hope some of you had an opportunity to look at it. And Bryant Gumbel was finding fault in the fact that he referred to this MMA fight between Garrett, who is 23 and born with Down syndrome, with another young man who is, I think, 28 and was afflicted with cerebral palsy. Now, if you got online and looked at their pictures, I saw pictures of Garrett when he was like 16, 17, and he looked like the personification of a child with Down syndrome. He was very heavy, very, you know, very unfit looking, and not very coordinated looking. You know, he looked like he would have struggles with a lot of motor skills and things like that. And now, you look at him after he decided on his own that he wanted to train, he wanted to be thinner, he is now a lean, mean fighting machine.
Right.
And he's got his tattoos, he's got his pride, he's got this, you know, you are not going to put a label on me, you are not going to make me look like I can't do something that I know good and well I can. And if there's something I don't know how to do, I'm going to figure it out and make sure that I understand how to do it. And that's indeed what he has done. And in the video on his website, it shows him training other young kids that have got various afflictions as well, learning disabilities or Down syndrome or I don't know if he has kids with autism because it doesn't really tell you what's going on with the children that he's working with. It just says that they have different challenges and this is a friendly place for them to go and learn some of this. But to wait until 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it was, before the bout was to take place and have officials come in and stop the fight and say that it had not been sanctioned by the state, I think was one of the biggest discriminatory things I've ever heard of in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And I'm wondering if any of that was as a result of Brian Gumbel's comment, because remember he even said, you know, how is Florida, you know, how is the state of Florida allowing this to happen? I wonder if somebody in a position of authority heard that and said, oh, wow, you know, this is getting negative publicity. We better put our attention
mm-hmm.
to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a
mm-hmm.
lot of times that's how things happen. And then you get people that, to save face, so to speak, make political decisions that aren't necessarily right, but they're trying to have the correct appearance that they're doing something.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I think. Exactly what I think. In other words, somebody who's got a big name on television, the biggest media propaganda machine in the world, and
mm-hmm.
he talks like that and makes us look like, or not us, because I don't put myself in that same fishing boat, but they made the officials in the state of Florida, which happened so, I don't know, chronically and constantly between voting ballots and other mistakes that we make for whatever reasons. I don't even want to go into that tonight. But to make them look even more foolish than they have a tendency to appear on a regular basis, and this was something that they could do something about and throw their weight around and go do it. So it doesn't matter that they broke the heart of a self-made hero. That doesn't
right.
matter. It
right.
doesn't matter that they took away what this young man did all on his own to bring himself to a level that shows people that, damn if you want to do it, damn if you can't.
That's right. That's right. Think about that. I mean,
Well, it's everything we teach kids, Shelley. It's everything. You want to be that? You can be that.
That's right.
You can be that. If that's really what you want to do it.
That's right.
And he did. And he took it a step further by welcoming other people, other kids, other young people with challenges, and said,
mm-hmm.
hey, man, if I can do it, you can do it. Come on, I'll show you how.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, what else is he supposed to do to be taken seriously, recognized that he's somebody to be reckoned with?
That's right.
Instead of treating him like he is not capable, not suitably, what's the word I want, suitably schooled in the ethics of what he's doing. That's where they're going to go with this. They're going to, because Brian Gumbel said, what kind of people want to watch a spectacle like this? Oh, my God, give me a break. Way back in the days of Jesus Christ, they put great big arenas and had people fight to the death.
That's right. That's right.
And if you were both dragging ass, they sent a lion in to finish the job.
Well, see, the whole thing is that they're making this into something it's not, which is a shame. They're making it into, as Brian Gumbel put it, a spectacle. It's not a spectacle. It's an athletic competition, okay? Do I like seeing people beat each other's brains in? No. However, I have to admit, I have watched some of these cage fighters, the ones that are sanctioned, not the ones that are done in basements where there's no rules and they really could kill each other, but the ones that
right.
are sanctioned where they look to make sure that the guy is still coherent and things like that. And it fascinates me that these guys will train so hard and have such physical stamina, have physical agility, have physical strength, okay? They're very, very powerful, and it's exciting to watch them to see what lengths people will go to develop their bodies and to develop skills. And I'm sorry, whether people like what they're doing with it or not, this is something that takes discipline. It takes
mm-hmm.
work, okay?
Yep.
This is their particular craft. And if they're not being forced into it, okay, this is something that makes them want to get up in the morning. This is what charges them up. What's wrong with watching them perfecting their craft? I don't have bloodlust. I don't go there to see them maim each other. I go there to see two people who are physically matched to each other in size and ability go at it in a way to see who is going to be triumphant over the other one. And that's what they're trying to do, okay?
Yes.
And when it's done in a sanctioned way, there's respect. They shake each other's hands going in. They shake each other's hands going out. You know, there's sportsmanship, things like that. So it's not a spectacle unless you're putting one guy in there and another guy in there that they're not matched with, and you're just watching them beat each other to a bloody pulp. Now, that would offend me. But that's not what these matches are about. I'm sorry. That's not what these matches are. They're turning it into something it's not. And that's where all the reaction's coming from.
Well, and let's face it, words. We've talked about this before. How you explain something to somebody or how you describe something is worth its weight in gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I told you what was going to happen, mm-hmm. the night of the match, I did tell you, and you were like, neither one of us like fighting. It's not our cup of tea. And I told that to Garrett and to his dad and to his grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I feel like I know Garrett and I have feelings for him, it would bother me to see somebody hurt him. I'm not going to lie.
Right. Exactly.
But, I mean, it bothered me when I watched my own kids try to play football. So, some things are just what they are. However, if I explained to you what was going to happen and I told you, like I did you, here's this young man who was born with this horrible, debilitating challenge, and he overcame it. And now he's doing this and he's doing that and everything, and you were like, oh, my God, what a beautiful story. And you and I were both teary-eyed over the story. Knowing anything about Garrett yet, we were all teary-eyed over the story.
Yeah, I thought it was very, moving. I thought it was
mm-hmm.
very inspirational. And despite what his particular, despite how he chose to express his physical fitness and what he chose to go into, the bottom line is the fact that he chose it and perfected it is something that should be applauded, not ridiculed.
Mm-hmm. Or being taken so far out of context to make it something that it isn't.
Every time,
you know, you can put it. I said today to his grandfather, I said, you know, we talk about this on my show all the time, and that
mm-hmm.
is the fact that so many people talk before they get the whole story. And Bryant Gumbel is a seasoned reporter, and big in the sports arena. So when he said what he said, people paid attention. Why? Because he's been doing this for a very, very long time. And people were affected by his words. But the truth of the matter is, he could have chosen other words and turned everybody in a whole different direction had he wanted to. This is what he wanted to do. He wanted to make it seem like it was an unbelievable spectacle, and Florida should be ashamed of themselves. It was another opportunity, like I said, to make Florida look like a bunch of idiots. And I think it's terrible that a young man who's struggled and worked so hard to get where he got, that he had to pay the price for mistakes made by people in a lot higher seats than he sits in.
Exactly.
And I said to I told his grandfather, I said, give him a message for me. And he said, okay. I said, you tell him that thanks to Bryant Gumbel, now when you finally get it sanctioned and you get to go and you get to have this fight, you're going to have standing room only. Because thanks to all this media coverage and everything, it's going to be bigger than you ever dreamed it could be. So maybe that's why it happened. Maybe the truth of the matter is more people do need to see how somebody can overcome and how somebody can lift themselves up to a place that gives them back so much pride in themselves. I mean, in one of his statements, he says, young kids think I'm a superhero.
Aww.
I mean, every time I hear his voice say that, I get a big lump in my throat because I think to myself, they don't know the half of it, you know.
Really?
I mean, little kids think you're a superhero because, you know, you're out there and you look all muscular and you know what you're doing and everything. Somebody like me, an old grandma, great-grandma, look at you and you say something like that, and I'm like, you have no idea how much of a superhero you are.
Mm-hmm.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
And and again, his own family, I'm sure, is torn about thinking that he's going to get hurt. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous to think that they're not. They love him, you know, and he's a big, you know, he's a big part in their lives. Even though he's 23, because of all that's gone on, I imagine that they are, you know, they're probably involved in almost everything that he does. Not just this, but many other things. So, of course, they probably, his grandfather said to me, don't get me wrong. He says when he goes in there, and in the very beginning, he said my stomach would tighten up. I said, I'm sure. But again, you know, that happens with almost everything they do when they're yours.
Right.
You worry about everything they do. You worry about the decisions they make about. I mean, I felt that way when some of mine walked down the damn aisle, for good reason, obviously.
That's right.
But, I mean, you know, those kind of things don't go away. But you still have got to applaud his guts, his tenacity, his inner strength. I mean, you know, I said to him on the phone, I said, you know, you didn't just make muscles on the outside. You know that. I said, you made amazing muscles on the inside.
Well, that's a great
and
way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's true, right? Every day we talk about kids that get picked on. Our sweet Gary that calls and talks to us, who was a small-framed young guy and everything, and who was sweet as the day is long and loving and caring and everything, got picked on all of his life.
Right.
You know, for really nothing, except for that he was, you know, a little bit different back in those days, and it wasn't like he displayed it either.
Right.
You know? But I think that when anybody realizes that you can, you know, you can put yourself out there and do things like that and change the way people look at you, the way you feel about yourself, I mean, that's amazing. That is just, there's nothing more amazing than that, in my opinion, to be able to put yourself in a place where people have that much respect for you just because of your own personal efforts, not because of who you were born to or how much money's in your pocket or what kind of car you drive or what business you own, but who you are personally. That's amazing, Shelley. I mean, you and I both know how we feel about certain people. There's some people that we are just, you know, think are awesome. And then there's other people, we're friends with them and we like them and everything, but, you know, they struggle and we know it and there's nothing we can do about it. And the same, I have so many kids in my life. And I see some of them struggling. I see some of them that things come easy to. Everybody's different. And it's all about what they're willing to do for themselves to get themselves to a different place. I told all the teenagers about this young man. I was like, you have to see this because this is amazing. On that note, I'm standing in my kitchen tonight. I always make dinner before the show, and in comes, I had taken Josh and Austin over for football practice, and Mikey came in, and the three boys come into the kitchen, and I was barefooted, which I don't do very often anymore because of my sore heel, but for some reason I had my shoes off. And they all walked in, and they're all standing around me, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And they're like, what's the matter, Graham? And I said, am I shrinking? And they all started laughing, and they all put their arms around me, and they're all like half a head taller than me.
I know.
All
I know.
Of them. Well, it happens to you all the time.
you're
a little shit. I'm not.
Well, welcome to my world, Renee.
Oh my God! I called my son Spike out of the back room, and I said, "Get out here!" And he comes out, and he says, "What?" And they're all standing. I said, "Look at this!" And he says, "Oh my God! They're all taller than you, Mom." I
Amazing.
Said, "I know. I don't like this."
That's hilarious.
All grinning at me. So they all put their arms around me so that they can, like, you know, show me exactly. I said, well, you know, maybe this is a good thing. I've never been somebody who felt small anywhere, so maybe this is a good thing.
That's very funny.
I was reminded of a very funny joke today. I got a Facebook message from my younger sister, whose son, who just graduated from high school, got a job as a plumber's apprentice. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations. I said, well, you already know how to wear the pants, you know, because of the old plumber's crack, you know. And I said, now I have a joke to tell you. Do you know the difference between a waitress and a toilet? And he said, no. And I said, well, a toilet can only handle one asshole at a time. He goes, very funny, Aunt Renee, very funny. I said, I always thought it was funny when I was a waitress, and very true as well.
I like that. It's very, very good. That's great. Well,
so,
I'm telling you, so what is going to come of this now? They're working on being able to get this sanction so that they can move forward.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is going to happen, and it will be wonderful if it does. You remember the story about Bailey, the young girl who fought for her Gay Straight Alliance meeting and all that stuff, and she was able to accomplish it, and the judge said, yes, you have to do the after school and you leave it open, and yes, she can do her Gay Straight Alliance meetings. She took the ACLU.
Right.
The ACLU backed her. And that's who I think is going to ride in on a white horse for Garrett.
No, I hope so. I hope so.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think is going to happen because they're already, they're already looking at it and understanding that it is incredibly discriminating, and it won't, you know, I don't think it'll last. I think they'll figure out a way to sanction. I mean, they were doing it at the reservation, so it should have been okay. Once they got, I don't know who's in charge of the reservation, the chief or whoever's reigning chief or something can say what happens on his own land and stuff like that. But like you said, because of the stuff that Brian Gumpel On my Facebook page, I said, is it just me, or did everybody else notice that Gumble rhymes with Dumble? I wasn't his best fan years ago, and now he's really on my poop list, you know.
Did you actually get anybody respond to that yet, or did you just do it?
I just did it. I did it a few days ago. Yeah, I did get some responses. Everybody just laughed. Renee, you're going to get in trouble. I said, well, that's a story of my life. Pretty much. You know.
That's like a big, oh, well.
Yeah, uh-huh. What are they going to do to me that I haven't done to myself, Shelley? That's what I want to know. I mean, really, what are they going to do to me that I haven't done to myself?
There isn't any.
I don't leave much room for anything else to get done. I'm pretty on that path, all on my lonesome. So tomorrow night we'll do something else, because there won't be much to talk about since I wasn't on the show all week, and normally on Friday nights we do a recap. So if there's something, Shel, that you'd like to talk about tomorrow night, or a topic that you'd like to open, like I said, I have invited Garrett's family to be back on, but right now they're crazy busy, but I think eventually they will be back on the show, and they did give me permission tonight to talk about everything that I talked about and give our point of view about what happened. So tomorrow night we'll leave the door open, and of course there's always something, because very sadly there's always something going on. But next week, again, if I forget to say this tomorrow night, next week again, I will be on the air Monday night, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be iffy, but I will keep everybody posted. When my son Michael's surgery is a lot more scary than what my husband just went through. Michael, as I explained before, was hit by a car when he was 13, and these are repercussions of that accident 30 years later. And in preparing him for the surgery to do a, not a graft, but cut out the part of his trachea that has scarred closed again, and sew it back together, they found stenosis in his cervical spine. Mm-hmm. So both things are going to be operated on, first the spine and then the trachea. And Valerie, my daughter-in-law, was advised today that Michael will need care for 10 to 12 weeks. And Valerie got up. I'm sorry?
He'll need what for 10 to 12 weeks?
He'll need care. He'll need somebody to help him with bathing and everything. So Valerie took a medical leave of absence and will be home. And they're going to get a little break with Valerie's mother, because hospice will step in and do a little bit. But otherwise, and young Mike is doing very well. And he will be there helping, and of course the rest of the family will help as well.
Right.
But Mike's surgery is pretty, pretty intense. So again, those of you who have a, on a first name basis with God, don't forget to mention our names, and keep positive energy coming in this direction. I'm not really worried, because I know he's amazing and he will be okay. I just want everybody else to be okay along with him. We'll talk again tomorrow night, and I want to thank everybody. Thanks, Shelley Belly. I will talk to you later. And
yes,
if you think of something that you'd like to talk about tomorrow night, give me a call in the morning and let me know what it is, and I'll do some research. But
I'll call you in the morning anyway, just to touch base with you, probably around 10 o'clock. And then and we'll kind of get our game plan on.
Okay, sounds like a plan. So thanks, everybody. from my heart to yours, Reenie, saying good night and God bless. Good night, Shel.
All right. Good night, Reenie. Good night, everyone.